everybody, to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. It is a special day for me because my guest today is calling in from the Netherlands. Before we get started, I want to just remind you that there are some really great books out there. I'm going to recommend a few of them to you. One of them is called A Way Out of Nowhere by author Nancy Gerber. J.R. Backlund has a book called Down the Broken Road. I highly recommend. Claire Fullerton's The Morning Dove is available. Gavin Rees, Absolver Rome, fantastic book. I just finished reading it. And Dr. Gary M. Jackson wrote a book called Surviving Mass Victim Attacks. I highly recommend this to you. My guest today is Bradley Charbonneau. His new book is Spark. And also, I have one other book I want to tell you about. Let me find the name. Sorry, I don't have it right in front of me. but it's here. Lindy Stevens is the one who sent it to me. She has a new book releasing, and it is called Lindy Walker. There she goes. Fear No Truth. So please check her out. Everybody can go to Amazon. As I said, my guest today is calling in for the Netherlands. He had an interesting story that kind of everybody goes through, but turned it into something else. In 2015, he lost his dad. He says it was like the first time he recognized that he was mortal and that this is the only life we're given, which is absolutely true, unless you're a cat. And of course, he's not a cat. So he packed up his family and moved and decided that he was supposed to be writing. So he started writing every single day. He's published, I think, 12 books, maybe more now, and has been writing them with his children. It's a really interesting thing that Bradley's doing, and I'm so happy to welcome Bradley Charbonneau to the show. Bradley, welcome to Authors on the Air, all the way from the Netherlands. How is your day going?
It is going great. Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I am fascinated that you have decided to write books with your kids. And was this your intention all along to write with your kids? Or were you a writer who, never really did anything about it? Will you kind of tell a little bit more about how all this started?
No, I was much more the writer who never did anything about it. And I talk in one of my most important book is called Every Single Day. And it's
right.
About how a daily habit, how a small, tiny even daily habit can lead to however big a change you can handle, basically. And I started writing on a challenge on November 1st, 2012, a 30-day challenge to write every day. And at that point, which is just 2018, that's 6 years ago, seems like an eternity. You know what? I'm going to interrupt myself. At that point, I was a different person. That's how deeply this has all affected me. I look back to that guy, that like poor sap, November 1st, 2012, and I feel sorry for him. He was what I call dreaming the dream instead of living the dream. And
wow.
He was hoping and wanting and wishing and waiting and. But I think in the back of his head, he didn't really think it was going to happen. And I think this is the way a lot of us live our lives. We're living some life that we think we have to, or maybe we do have to for a while. No, of course we got to pay bills, we got to put food on the table. Yep, I get it. But we only do have one. And what are we going to choose to do with it?
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's those 30 days back in 2012, and it was just a 30-day challenge. But at that point, for that Bradley Charbonneau at that point in time, that scared me to death. 30 days in a row, I mean, that was 30 days more than a row than I had ever written because I was writing 0 days in a row. I wasn't writing. I was a wannabe writer who wasn't writing. I used to even joke I was a travel writer who didn't travel or write. And it was a joke, but later I realized it wasn't funny at all. It was really sad. I wasn't doing the things I believed that I, as a person, should be doing. And this is sort of where I joke about the nine lives of the cat, because I think if I was honest with myself, I thought, you know what, I'll just do this in the next life. And
right,
I know I'm not,
right.
I'm pretty sure I'm not a cat. And what I was basically saying was that I'm not going to do these things.
Or maybe you were waiting for an intervention from someone who's going to come along and say, here, let's sit down together and I'll show you and I'll do it for you, which I think a lot of people, you know, are waiting for someone to start the process for them. But the fact of the matter is, I believe what you're trying to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you can think and wish and dream, but you got to take the steps.
Yeah, you can wait until you get sick. You can wait until somebody in your family dies. You can wait for some, you know, horrendous nightmare to shake up your world. That works too. I not recommend, 4 out of 5 doctors do not recommend.
Right.
And it's not the fun way, but it's also, I mean, even though I started in 2012 writing, I still didn't really, really, really turn it around until 2015 when my dad passed away. Because I was still kind of just not walking the talk. I was talking the talk. I was doing it. Mm-hmm. I was writing. But then there was a mindset shift that kicked in. And that was the even bigger shift than the action of writing every day. Writing every day, I mean, you'd think that would do it, right? I'm writing. Yay, I'm doing the writer thing. Yay, isn't that great? Time to change my mind. And that's when things really took off.
What do you think that shift in you was? Can you put that into words?
Yeah, it's very easy. It's mortality.
Yeah.
I think, hey, I'm gonna die at some point. And do I want to be that person who on my deathbed regrets the things I did not do? Or do I want to be that person who, you know, does not die with regrets, or at least not big ones? Because this was pretty much the biggest one I had. And I think part of the whole challenge was that because it was such a big dream for me to become an author, that I put it up on such a high pedestal that I was afraid to start, because I had these lofty ambitions of all this fantastic future. But I thought, you know what? I cannot fail if I don't start. So
this
that's
is true.
Safe.
Yeah.
And let's just do that. And let's just pretend I'm going to do this someday and tell people that I'm going to do this someday, but not really do it. Because if I really do it, then I might fail. Oh, and then what?
And, you know, isn't it interesting how failure is such a great teacher? It's the best professor in your life you're ever going to have. Because the next time when you try something, you know not what not to do. So good for you. You had your come to Jesus moment, so to speak, and decided to write. So let's talk about what you're writing now. What did you always want to write?
Well, you know, I'm gonna go back to failure here real quick, because I think failure is such an important topic. And I was going to use the word advanced. I'm advanced so far that I embrace failure. Failure is fun. Whereas if you had asked 2012 Bradley, I would have been so scared. Oh, failure, no, don't do that. That's terrible.
Right.
That's the end of the world.
Right.
Whereas now, so to like move this on to my more recent books, I remember these days so clearly, March 3rd, 2014, I'm sitting on the red chair in my living room with my then 8-year-old son. And we just read a very average children's book. And I look at him and I say, we could do better than that. And he gives me this sort of challenging look like, are you serious? Really? What, us? And that was March 3rd, 2014. On April 1st, 2014, we had published a book.
Wow.
So within whatever that is, 27 days or something like that. And the significance of April 1st, 2014 was when I was sitting on that chair with my son, I had published a book on April 1st, 2004. And it hit me real hard that it will have been 10 years that I had published no books. And the book back in 2004 was a totally different thing. It was a travel guide that I had been offered. It was a totally different world. It wasn't really my thing. It was fine or not, but it was just sort of that date that was sticking in my head. And it was an anniversary of pain. And I thought, I can't celebrate this 10 years of without having a book. So in whatever it was, 27 days, we published a book. Now, if we run back to 2012, I never would have dared to think to publish a book in 27 days. Are you kidding? That's going to be a disaster. It's going to be terrible. It's going to fail. And so that is part of the difference in the mindset of then 2014 Bradley, because I said, hey, let's write a book together, you, me, and your brother, and let's publish it in 3 weeks. We'll write it, edit it, and publish it in 3 weeks. And of course, they had no idea what I'm talking about. They're 8 years old and 10 years old. They're like, sure, okay, whatever.
But you had made a commitment now to your kids. So
I did.
This wasn't like something you could back down from now.
No.
You can't say, let's do this.
Exactly.
And you actually had to do it. Did you publish that book?
We did.
And what is the name of
that book? The Secret of Kite Hill.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at that right now with Liam and Luca, right?
Yeah. Their names in the book are highly secretive to protect their identity. Their names in the book are Lee and Lou.
How fun. Tell me about that. Tell me about writing a book with your children. How did you go about doing that?
So that question you're asking is the question I've been getting for 4 years.
And I'm sure.
It's so interesting because very few people care about the book itself. They don't say, oh, where can I buy it? Oh, you know, can I please read about the adventure with the dog? You know, what happened? What is the secret of Kite Hill? I don't think anybody has ever asked me, what is the secret of Kite Hill?
I'll ask you that later. Let's find out how you wrote it with your kids. If you so desperately need that question, Bradley, I'm going to ask it.
And so, but see, this is the beauty of my entire philosophy of why I'm writing the current book, why I just wrote Spark. Because the actual book, The Secret of Kite Hill, was not the end goal. And this part my kids don't get, and they won't get until they're much older. But the end goal was the process. The end goal was working together with them on something. And I'm big on finishing. Just like you said, you know, a lot of people start, or a lot of people might get through the middle, but I think finishing is so important.
Absolutely.
So in 3 weeks, right? Is this book going to win any literary awards? No. Do I care if it wins a literary award?
No, you don't.
No, I wanted it to be done, and I wanted it to be out there, and I wanted my kids to say, which he said later, I caught him, my cool 12-year-old boy at that point. It's like, yeah, or 8 and 10, 10. It's like, yeah, I have a book on Amazon. It'd be so cool.
I love that. You know, I see a couple things happening from an outsider standpoint. One of them is that you and your kids made a commitment and followed through with it. And I think that's a really valuable tool for children to have. The second thing is you did something collaborative that stays in perpetuity. And the third thing is your children, you did a bonding exercise with your children about creativity. So have I hit any of those correctly? Were those any of your goals?
You hit them so clearly on the head I couldn't have fed it to you better. It was, in fact, it's beautiful to hear you say it, because you also said it very succinctly and beautifully, but that is exactly what I'm going for. And I talk often about how you can have, remember like when kids are really little and they say, oh, they're playing, look, they're playing in parallel, meaning they're sitting next to each other, the little toddler types, right? Sitting next to each other,
right,
playing with their own world or doing their own thing, but they're
right,
not really interacting, they're not really together. And that was the big difference here. We were really working as a team. And what I consider the actual product, if you will, the result, is only the part that is the overlap of our experience. So
yes,
Luca experienced something, Liam experienced something, I experienced something. Those three parallels, it's all fine. But only the part where it overlaps is what I, in the end, consider, and I'm going to use a big word here, a big, scary, important word, I think the overlap of our experiences together is love.
Absolutely. I think this is something, if you never did this again, I would bet you anything I have, except for my cats, that this is a memory that will stay with your children forever. And it's also a life lesson that they don't even know that they learned yet.
Yeah.
And I would venture to say that it will make them better people as they grow older.
Yeah.
I have noticed that parents who interact with their children creatively, whether it's traveling or language or just really heavy duty one-on-one time, their children are so much more well-rounded because they are your most important thing. I mean, you have children because you supposedly love your children and you want the best for them. So it's a really great way to do something with your kids. Plus, your kids read. You know, readers are leaders, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
There's just no denying that. Yeah. So this is the first book you wrote with your kids. Have you since then written another? Or did that experience the lesson you wanted it to teach?
That could have been and would have been just fine. It would have been just the one little book, Secret of Kite Hill, call it a day. That was fun. That was great. We're done. That would have been absolutely enough. But then writer guy here, who writes every single day since November 1st, 2012,
right?
I'm kind of addicted to writing lots. And I can't stop. I'm a machine. And so I'm just cranking it out. So we ended up writing four more books. And three of them were together with another family, another group of two boys and the dad. And that was both like a disaster and, you know, heaven at the same time. It was super fun. And that's about a castle. It was the four boys had to go to a wedding in a castle, and they were only kids there, and they weren't even really invited to the wedding. They were just sort of, they had to go, and they were supposed to have a babysitter for 4 days, and the babysitter flaked. And so there's basically four boys, 3 days, one castle, you do the math. And it's just all adventure and crazy stuff the boys do.
How fun is that?
Yeah. And that was together with two other boys, a whole other family. That multiplied the complexity of working together like exponentially. That was really hard. I can't say I can recommend it. That was tough.
Yeah,
Starting out, keep it simple.
Let me ask you something. Isn't that part of team building though?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's also the reality of working with a team, of everything from scheduling to, you know, different opinions and different ideas and working together. No, that's like the real world. You know, welcome to committee meetings. It was hard. It was hard. But for starters, like for people who are getting started. And so now we've come like full circle, and now we're to the book that parents have been asking me to write for 4 years. I don't know why it's taken me so long, but because I would get people. I got one guy at a dinner party. And you know what's fun? Is when you're creating something, people want to know what you're doing. If somebody asks you, oh, what are you doing? Or if you say, oh, I'm doing my job and it's the same as it was yesterday and tomorrow will probably be the same too and it's my job and whatever, like, okay, great, next. But if you say,
right,
I'm creating something, and then if you add, I'm creating something with my kids, they're like, what? What are you doing? Oh, wow, what are you doing? And so
yeah,
all I have to say, you know, at a dinner party or something is, I'm writing a book together with my kids. And they'd be like, excuse me? You're doing your kids? I mean, you got them like unglued from iPads? How'd you do that part? And then I remember one parent specifically at one party, it was several years ago, and he said, he like looks at me straight in the eye and like holds me on the shoulder. He's like really serious. You could tell he's like a frantic father, you know? And he's like, I will pay you whatever you want for the weekend workshop. Just tell me when it is. Whoa.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought, wow, I mean, I'm just like having a fun time with my kids writing this dorky book. But then I realized, I'm like, parents want bonding with their kids. They want a deeper relationship with their kids. And exactly like you said. You said,
yeah,
it's a memory. It's a time capsule.
Yes.
It's
yes,
something that they create and they will have forever. And then to throw another little nugget of beauty into it all, what's really neat is that that it will be the time capsule for that particular moment in time. So my
absolutely,
boys were then 8 and 10. And now they're, whatever they are, 13 or 15. And my 15-year-old, I mean, he has armpit hair. You know, he's like a dude. And back in the day, and he speaks, you know, like monosyllabic answers. Like, you know, hey, how was school? He's like, good. You know, like, that's it. That's the conversation. But back then, so I love audiobooks and I'm a huge fan and I love creating them as well. So all of my books, not all of them, but most of them I have in audiobook format, and I'm such a fanatic, I record them myself. And for that first book, The Secret of Kite Hill, I forced my kids to record. They had their own individual chapters, chapters 8 and 9. And they had to read, they had to narrate their own chapters. And the process,
wow,
was awful. We were so bad. We did all the technical, we did everything technically wrong. It sounded terrible. The dogs barking in the background, there's all this noise. It was terrible. And we got rejected by the audiobook company a couple times. But I finally got it accepted. And what I have today, speaking of time capsules, is that I have my 8-year-old son and my 10-year-old son recording their sweet little angelic voices about, you know, the dragon. Then the dragon went down in the hill and the dog followed him. Like, oh, you know, it's like bring tears to your eyes for the sweet little boys they used to be.
Boy, yeah.
And I have that forever.
Yeah, you do. You've got something so precious that if parents would stop and think about it, what a brilliant idea it is. Now, I want you to, because I promised you I would do this, what is The Secret of Kite Hill? Let's talk about this book here, Bradley, because since no one ever asked you, and by the way, friends, you can now get that free on Kindle.
Yeah.
If you go there, The Secret of Kite Hill, a Lee and Lou book one. Tell us about the book, please.
So in trying to get any sort of creativity out of my boys at that point, because, you know, this all, you know, dear parent friend listening, you might think, oh, sure, it's easy for you. You probably have like angelic little boys who, you know, play violin and learn Mandarin on the side. Like,
right.
No.
No.
That would be a no. I mean, my boys after a few days are like, oh, Dad, not the book project again. No, anything but that. And so I had to make it easy and fun, right? And I resorted to anything, like underhanded trickery, you know,
of course,
bribery.
Bribes, absolutely.
Oh, anything. Jealousy. I would get their friends over and it's like, oh, well, if you guys want to do it, I'm asking your friends.
Everything.
And their friends
right,
were just infatuated. I've got some of the best content from some of their friends, you know, who were over for lunch. So I think that back then, the secret of Kite Hill was coming home from school every day. And we walked over the, it really exists, is Kite Hill in San Francisco. And we walked home over Kite Hill every day. But what we did not know in our reality of life was that there was a little cave under the hill. And one day, that orange and blue, overly bouncy dog balls, it went down in this little hole, which opened up into this cavernous cave below, where dogs went to his ball. Yeah, the dog went after his ball. And then the boy, one after the other, went after the dog. And then one brother went after the brother. And I'm up top thinking, oh, let me see, my dog's down there. My two boys are down there. Guess I got to go. And we all went under this, into this cave, into Kite Hill. And those were the adventures of what happened. Yeah.
That is a great story. I'm so glad I asked you that. Now you can just say, well, Pam asked, you can ask too.
Right.
So,
but that was the beauty of it. The beauty of the entire creative process was, all right, boys, we're walking home from school. We're on Kite Hill. What happens? And you have to learn to be quiet too. You have to learn to shut up, listen, and hear what they say. And then I think the three most powerful words you can say to your kids are, then what happened?
Oh, yeah. Kids are naturally creative, I think. They are storytellers.
Yeah.
If you ignite that fire in them and you keep saying the what if, what else, and what else?
Yeah.
You know, and then what? If you can do that, I think that's how, as a matter of fact, I'm certain that's how many writers start off in their young lives, because someone says, and then what happened? And what if this happened? So, so because of your experience working with your children and other families, you wrote this wonderful book called Spark, How to Write a Book with Your Kids and Why You Should. This book is available now. You can get it through Kindle Unlimited. So you've now, at this point, written five books together with your kids. And it isn't about the content of the books. It is just what we were talking about earlier. So this is your how-to guide for parents or others who want to be creative with young children?
Yeah. I mean, and speaking of others, there is one example in the book of an uncle and a niece.
And that might be our mutual friend, Gavin Reese, correct?
It is. Yep.
So let's talk about Gavin's story, because I think that that's important for people to understand. You don't have to be a parent with children to write stories and create with young people. Will you talk about
that? I have a chapter in the book called The Widow and the Orphan. And I could even see this going beyond family to,
of course.
I was thinking of my brother-in-law's grandmother, who's 97 years old, and she's a firecracker. She's so alive. And talks, and tells stories, until you walk away. And then another friend of mine was taking in foster kids. And this is within like 2 days of each other. I just happened to hear about that person, then I heard about that person. And I thought, wow, these two people would just love each other, hanging out with each other. And what if I told grandma over there, and I told little boy, I'm like, okay, you guys, you're working together. Here's your project. Here's your timeline. You guys are whatever, however it works. You guys are writing a book in a month. Here's the guidelines. Go. I mean, can you just imagine like the fireworks that would come off of those two?
Oh, sure. It would be amazing. So let's talk about Gavin and his niece, because I like this story very much.
Yeah. So Gavin, I met a year ago. We were at a writer's retreat together in Austria. And so this is now, that was a year ago, 3 years after I had written the book with the kids. And even then, I apparently talked about this idea of this book about how to write a book with your kids. And I guess I had an influence on him, because later he told me that he was so inspired by my story of my book with my kids and all the benefits of it, that he went back home and his, together with his niece, they wrote a book together. And he was very sort of literary about it, and, you know, was trying to get a plot and a story and a challenge and a solution, and I, which is much, much more than I did. I'm like, okay, boys, walking home from school, what happens next? And he really gave his niece a little mini education in writing a story. And they did it.
Wow.
And they finished it. And the book exists. And it,
that is so cool.
Oh, yeah. And then, I mean, he was threatening me. He said, if you don't write this book about how to write the book with your kids and all that, he's like, I'm going to do it. And so finally, a year later, I finally do it. But this is the, you ever have that where you think that everything you know, everybody else knows? And the experience you have, you think everybody else has.
Yeah, but it's not true.
Well, I know, but I often think that. I think, oh, well, everybody knows this, or, you know.
Well, I'm going to relate to you a little story. On Saturday, I had to do an interview, which I never do Saturdays, but the author was 17 years old and still in high school. And when she was in fourth grade, it relates in a certain way. When she was in fourth grade, when they were in their classroom, she'd be scribbling stories, and a boy told her that girls wrote stupid stuff. They wrote girly things. They didn't know how to write about monsters and all that kind of stuff, zombies and whatever. And in her fourth grade mind, she took that as a challenge and began to write in earnest, and was picked up by a very big publisher and is now in print. She just released her first book. Now, her mother was the English teacher, I believe she said, and her father was the band director. So she had a lot of support in her school as she was writing this.
Yeah.
She's written several books. This is the first one to be published. She says she wants to edit the fourth grade book that she wrote because she really likes the story a lot. But what she learned from her parents allowing her to go through this process was she went to the Pacific Northwest Writers Association and learned how to pitch her book to an agent. And that's how she published. And she actually told me, I said, people are always saying, what do I say when I'm doing Pitch Fest? And she gave me an actually great synopsis of how to pitch your book. So I think creativity flows all through kids. I mean, their minds are like sponges. And if you have the right person, like you're just thinking, oh, it doesn't only have to be a parent. You're absolutely right. I think given that little push to read, to draw, to write, to play music, you know, I started playing piano and organ and other instruments because as an infant, my parents bought me a small little wooden piano that you could just beat and bang on the keys. And I kept saying, I want to learn to play the piano. I want to learn to play. So I started playing the piano at 7 years old. And and my father would go to my lessons with me and sit and just listen. And he would go and tinker on the piano when we got home. He learned by osmosis. So it was a really cool thing. So what you're doing is you're shaping these beautiful little minds into becoming these super brainiacs. And I think when kids are creative, they're also empathetic. They learn how to diffuse situations. So many lessons, Bradley, that you've taught your kids. And it's such a lovely thing. I want to ask you, before I let you go, what is past the sour cream? Now, I wouldn't have known anything about it except I was looking at your email address and I thought, well, what the hell is that? So, because I know you have an author page. Yes. But I had no idea what it was until I went to look at it. Will you tell listeners what PassTheSourCream.com is all about?
Yeah, so that's my blog. That's where I write. That's where I write every day. But the history of the name. So I worked for many years as a naming consultant. So I created names for products and companies. And because of I have a business degree and I speak four languages. And so they loved me because I had both sides of the equation, of the creative side, but then also the business side. And in the naming world, there are some rules. First of all, you can't create your corporate name with beers and pizza on a Friday night. It's not going to work. But the best names, the ones that will pass any test, are the names that have a story behind them. So even if it's weird or hard to spell or it doesn't seem to make sense, if the name has a story behind it, you sort of get a free pass. And so that name came from, I traveled with my wife. We went through Africa and Asia. And we had, in Asia, we were like 4 months in Asia or something. And I think I had rice and noodles every day for, 197 days in a row.
Oh.
And I love Asian food, but 197 days in a row of it. And we went to, this is crazy, but we were in China and there was a Kenny Rogers Roasters restaurant, which I had never heard of, but I don't even know existed. I don't know if it still exists, but it's very like Americana, Western food. And they went in there and they had baked beans, they had baked potatoes, they had just like anything I hadn't seen in forever, it seemed like. Uh-huh. And we were in China, and so I said, given the choice between seeing the Great Wall and a baked potato, pass the sour cream.
Pass the sour cream. Well, I love this page because it is really some exceptional, beautifully done photography and blog work, and I like it quite a bit. Please tell everybody though where your author page is, and let's talk about that. And spell your last name for everyone.
Sure. Right. Author page is bradleycharbonneau.com, BradleyCharbonneau.com.
There you go.
And if you can't spell that, you can always find Pass the Sour Cream. You'll find me.
That's right. You'll find it. I want to congratulate you on doing something so brilliant. And it must have seemed simple when you had the idea, but I don't know if you started off thinking of all the wonderful outcomes that writing books with your kids would bring. But I hope you've inspired others to do the same thing. I want to write a book with my cat or something. I could.
But see, that's the thing. I mean, we started out talking about failure. And I think people are so scared of failure, and they're so scared of not achieving this, whatever fantastic literary multi-million-dollar award-winning piece of literature. And that is
not what
someone
else
would
say. Or what someone else might say. There's peer pressure does not go away once you get out of school. It's always there. So, I will admit, though, my talents do not lie in writing. I am lucky if I can put my shirt on inside, right side out when I leave the house in the morning. So writing a book probably wouldn't I don't have a desire to do that. But I think that if you have a desire to write a book about your dog or your squirrel or your funky neighbor whatever you find interesting, then write it, for crying out loud. Write
And think about the process. I mean, think about, what if you wrote about your squirrel? I mean, first of all, that's great. And I would love to hear what a kid had to say about what's a squirrel's life. But think about last weekend we went away and our train was on time and we stayed in a hotel and it was fine. And we had a dinner and it was okay. And then we came home. Like, okay, boring. And then the other weekend, we got a flat tire on the way our car broke down. We ate at this place that had the worst food I've ever had in my entire life. We went to out to a show that the theater burned down, and we had to come home with a bus. Okay, so which story is more fun to talk about?
Sure, the latter one.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's what I'm getting at with the book. I don't care if the book is the worst book known to literature. In fact, it'd probably make a better story, and it'd probably be more fun together with your kid. And guess what? Less pressure.
That's for sure. Bradley Charbonneau, I am thrilled to have you as my guest today. I cannot thank you enough for phoning in from the Netherlands and connecting with me. And I hope we get to do this again. As a matter of fact, you know, maybe I'll be talking to you about some ideas, and your kids will come on and tell me about their experiences. You think they do that? Probably not. They're old.
Yeah,
they're teenagers.
Yeah, you get my 15-year-old, and you can ask them how the experience was. It's good.
Good. Do you want to do it again?
Maybe.
No.
I know. They're teenagers. They don't turn into human beings again until they're in their 20s. I recognize.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, you're going to... This is it. Your creative time with your kids is done, baby, done. Yeah, the best you can hope for is show me how to drive, get me a car, and you take me to my football game.
And then you can leave.
And then you're done for. They don't need you again till later. Cherish the memories, Bradley. It's downhill now.
Glad I got it in when I did.
I'm telling you, you were wise then, wise. Now you're a father of teenagers. It's a whole new ball game.
Great.
I wish you and your family a lovely holiday and a very, very happy new year. Good luck with Spark and the rest of your books. I'm going to start following Past the Sour Cream, your blog. I just love the title. Thank you so much for being with me today, Bradley Charbonneau. What a terrific time this has been. Thank you.
It has been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy.
It's my pleasure. And that's my show for today, folks. I hope you all have a great day. Go create something with a kid. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Bye-bye.